Gary Nall. I'd like to welcome you to the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, putting the Dr. Andrew Wakefield case into the larger picture of the suppression of scientists and research challenging the status quo. The panelists today will include Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Then we'll have, secondly, was Dr. David Lewis, and finally, Don Laborro. Now, we will go first to Dr. Wakefield. He is down in Austin, Texas today. Now, Dr. Andrew Wakefield is probably unknown to the majority of Americans, unless they're watching him being savagely attacked on almost all the media, not the least of which was on CNN. And he is a gastroenterologist. He is an academic specializing in inflammatory bowel disease and the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, the MMR. He is a former fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons and published over 130 original scientific papers in book chapters. In 1998, he and his colleagues at the Royal Free Hospital in London reported a novel inflammatory bowel disease in children with developmental disorders such as autism. Dr. Wakefield resisted pressure to stop his investigations into a possible link between vaccinations, intestinal inflammation, and autism. In 2001, he was awarded the fellowship of the Royal College of Pathologists. He has also been a board member of the American charity Medical Interventions for Autism. The website is autismmediachannel.com. His book is Callous Disregard, Autism and Vaccines, and the Truth Behind the Tragedy, published by Skyhorse Press. Nice to have you with us today.
Gary, it's very nice to be back. Thank you.
About 2 years ago, we did a 7-hour investigative reporting series on Dr. Wakefield. And the reason that we spent almost a year in preparation was to simply ask a question. Are the allegations being reported all over the world about Dr. Wakefield, are they accurate, inaccurate, partially accurate? The people who were at the forefront of attacking him, such as a journalist who's won many awards and is respected by many in journalism and science reporting in particular, is a person named Dear. I invited, as a part of that series, Dear on the program to debate me. He did. We had a one-hour debate. Brian Dear has gone on a major crusade. Dr. Wakefield was the opening chapter in that crusade. Now, Dr. Wakefield, explain to the audience who may not be familiar with you, tell us about your original research, who was with you in that research, what your findings were, how you got a major medical journal, The Lancet, to publish your results, and then what happened after that. Because for 130 articles, for being a professor, for being one of the leading advocates of the science of gastroenterology, you had never had a controversy, you had never been challenged, and suddenly not only were you challenged and lost your license to practice medicine, but many consider the greatest gastroenterologist in the world was also discredited and lost his license, though he won his license back. So take us into the story so we can then understand what is to follow.
Right, I'll try and be brief, Gary, but as you say, I started with a team of academic gastroenterologists working at the Royal Free Hospital in London, and I was privileged to work amongst some of the best in the world, including Professor John Walker Smith. And in May 1995, parents started calling and saying my child was perfectly normal. In many cases, they'd received the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. They'd developed odd neurological problems afterwards. They'd become uncoordinated. They couldn't walk anymore. They'd become cross-eyed or they'd stopped sleeping, and then they progressively deteriorated into autism. I knew nothing about autism and asked how I might help as a gastroenterologist. The children also had severe gastrointestinal issues, which the parents believed were intimately associated with their neurological decline. These are children who had been, for the most part, developmentally normal in the early part of their life. And so we decided to look at this. We investigated it, and it became a compelling story. The parents were right. Shorten this very quickly. What we discovered was a novel inflammatory bowel disease in these children, rather like a mild form of Crohn's disease. When we treated that with the standard medication that you would use for inflammatory bowel disease, plus gluten and casein exclusion diets in particular, not only did the bowel symptoms get better, but the autism symptoms improved as well. It was rather like a sort of Lorenzo's oil, but being academics, we said, well, that didn't happen until we did it again and did it again and did it again. By the time I left the Royal Free, we'd done it. We'd seen about 170 or 80 children with remarkably consistent results. We published a series of papers, starting with a paper in The Lancet in 1998 and going on to a total of about 15 papers by the time I'd left the Royal Free in 2001, 2002, characterizing the bowel disease in exquisite detail, and that has now been confirmed by others around the world. The bizarre situation was that in reporting the parental story of regression following measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, then the heavens opened, and Brian Deer appeared on the scene some years later. What they had to do in order to protect the vaccine program in the UK and elsewhere was to not only go after me as the lead author of the paper, but to go after my colleagues, many of whom, as you rightly point out, were very, very eminent gastroenterologists. They had to not only try and discredit the bowel disease, but the vaccine association. It had to go lock, stock, and barrel. What happened extraordinarily is that the media appeared to favor Brian Deer's totally unqualified opinion over that of Professor John Walker Smith and his colleagues, who are, he was the founding father of the subject of pediatric gastroenterology. And so we have been in a battle ever since. It's a battle that we're now going to win. It's a battle that has confirmed beyond doubt around the world gastrointestinal distress and disease in these children, which is amenable to therapy. The tragedy for these children is that so much time has been wasted because of the efforts to discredit the bowel disease by those concerned with protecting policy and profit. And that, for me, has been the greatest shame of all. For me personally, it's been a privilege working with these families, and I would do it again. I don't have any regrets. It's just such a shame that medicine and science have become so corrupted by commercial imperatives that we, the very people that we are meant to serve, are being damaged as a consequence.
Let's go through it on several levels. First, there was a process where you were invited to give your evidence before the highest medical body in England. Tell us what happened, what the evidence was you submitted, and how did they treat that evidence?
Well, Brian Deer brought a case, in effect, against us. He articulated a series of multiple charges against us for unethical research, for putting children at risk for research purposes, which was not indicated clinically. So here he is saying to a senior clinical gastroenterologist that your clinical opinion is of no value whatsoever. These children, in my opinion, were research. It went before the General Medical Council, which is a rather it's a disgraceful group of politically motivated people who, rather than being one of the highest medical bodies in the land, is just a puppet to the British government and is under threat as self-regulation comes under the microscope. But we went before the General Medical Council to defend the allegations against us, and we were found guilty on all counts. But that's the story that's carried in the media. What is not carried in the media is that Professor Walker Smith appealed to the English High Court. I could not, because I couldn't afford it. But he appealed. I initially appealed, but that had to be withdrawn because of the costs associated with it. Justice really belongs to those who can afford it. And Professor Walker Smith went before the High Court. This is the first occasion it had ever become, the case had ever come before a proper court of law, And the judge threw it out. He said this is, in essence, he said it's his garbage. He accused them of bias. He accused them, in effect, of incompetence. He said the GMC panel were not capable of judging evidence. And Professor Walker-Smith had his license restored, quite rightly. He was completely exonerated. 90% of the charges against Professor Walker-Smith were exactly the same as those against me. So it is highly relevant to my own position as well. But there we are. I mean, that's life, you know, and I'm not going to dwell on that. Right now we're bringing Brian Deer and the British Medical Journal to Texas to sue them for defamation. And that is really where the focus of attention should lie now.
What evidence do you have to show that major people within the British scientific and the media community conspired in order to keep the public from being aware of how dangerous the MMR vaccine is, if indeed that can be proven that that was their motive? If you suggest that there was corruption of ethics, then you have to show motive, and then you have to show means, and you have to show evidence of that. Otherwise, it's just will be taken by the average person as, well, here's a man who was found guilty, lost his license, was trashed in the media, especially by Anderson Cooper, seemed to have relished in the attacks against you. And so, yeah, he's going to say anything. Very methodically and dispassionately, show us the evidence you have.
Certainly. Well, the evidence that we have, and the evidence, the case, let me make the case again. The case is a case of defamation, malicious defamation on the part of Deer, the British Medical Journal, and its editor, Fiona Godley, against me. And all of that evidence is available to the public. It is available from Travis County Courthouse and has been available to the public for several years now so that they can see a succession of filings both by me and by the defendants in relation to this. And they clearly show that there was undoubted defamation, misrepresentation of the facts. And the case before the court, when it comes to court, must answer as to whether this was malicious or not. And it is my sincere belief that it was, and that can be readily demonstrated. But I would invite anybody who wants to check on the evidence to go and obtain that from Travis County Courthouse. It's freely available. A lot of the evidence is actually available in my book, and it's fully documented. The one that you mentioned, Gary, Callous Disregard.
Could you give us the most important? Saying go to a website is not the same as sharing your strongest points.
I think one of the strongest issues, let me give you one example because it is such a complex case. Let me just cite you one example. The allegations against us was that there was no ethical approval to examine the tissues to do the study that we did that was reported in the Lancet. Now, the great majority of that was clinical. You don't need ethical approval to conduct clinical investigations of patients. However, there was one research element to it, and that is the analysis of the biopsies, a detailed research analysis to establish beyond doubt whether there was or was not inflammation. That ethical approval, the basis of Deer's claim is that these children were investigated before any such ethical approval was available. However, it was not. That was not the case. The ethical approval for Professor Walker-Smith had been granted over a year before the first child was investigated. The analysis of biopsies was approved by the Royal Free's Ethics Committee. Brian Deer had the documents in his possession that confirmed that. He had them in his possession. They were material evidence. He never disclosed them at any stage, either before, during, or after the GMC hearing, despite knowing that they were material evidence. Now, I would say that constitutes obstruction of justice. And that, I think you've actually questioned him about this, Gary, on your show, and he was unable, in fact, he did give you an answer, and he said, yes, they were disclosed. No, they were not. They were not disclosed at any time by him during the GMC proceedings. They were not produced in evidence, and he had them all of that time. So it's my belief that he's not only misled the General Medical Council, allowed them to continue to be misled, but has misled the listeners on your program as well.
Let's take a look at Rupert Murdoch. No one would have known, possibly no one would have believed, that there was this massive spying campaign being done by his top lieutenants at News of the World and some of the other publications, and the amounts of money spent to gain access, including one of them listening in on private phone conversations. If this had happened in the United States to any publication here, I believe there would have been a greater reaction. Now, there has been a trial. There have been people found guilty, including many of his most trusted top confidants. What does this say about the ethics of the British media, at least those that are under corporate control, and lack true independence and journalistic standards and integrity? Secondly, is there any association between Rupert Murdoch and his affiliation being on a board of directors of a major manufacturer of vaccines? Your thoughts, please.
The very good points you raise. I think that Rupert Murdoch is synonymous with the state of British journalism and indeed journalism elsewhere, but Britain seems to lead the world in sleaze and this kind of thing. They committed some atrocious violations of privacy, particularly related to News International, Rupert Murdoch's newspapers, which were, of course, included the Sunday Times, which published against me. What wasn't disclosed at all, and of course what has become public evidence or public common public knowledge since then, is that his son, James Murdoch, was on the board of GlaxoSmithKline, the manufacturer of the MMR, principal supplier in the UK, and was brought on there to protect the company's interests in the media. Protecting MMR was clearly foremost amongst his responsibilities. He was subsequently removed from the board of GlaxoSmithKline following disclosure of the sleaze and invasion of privacy, the illegal tapping of phones by his father's organization. Rupert Murdoch himself was described by a British MP as unfit to run a company, to run a business. So these are the kinds of people with whom you are dealing, and they will stop at nothing to protect the interests of those who work with them, and that includes the pharmaceutical industry and others. I think the ties with the government are also very close, and even though it was extremely embarrassing for the British government, and I think if that link had not been there, a great deal more might have been revealed. But nonetheless, it is a very, very sorry state of affairs. So this is what this is the message that the public get, and it's a message that is written and sanitized by those large corporations who really do not have the public interest at heart.
I appreciate these insights. I want you to hold on, please, because I want to bring our other two panelists in to give their perspective on this. My next guest is a person who is very familiar with Dr. Andrew Wakefield. In fact, he had taken extensive time to investigate the background of Dr. Wakefield, and he is Dr. David Lewis. Now, Dr. Lewis is a former senior research microbiologist with the Environmental Protection Agency's Research and Development Department and the only EPA scientist to be a lead author on research published in Nature, The Lancet, and Nature Medicine. He was responsible for discovering that HIV could be transmitted through certain dental equipment, which lead to the standardization of heat sterilization in dentistry. Also, his research forced the EPA to abandon the policy of promoting sewage sludge on farms, which subsequently forced him to lose his job when he turned his attention to studying illnesses and deaths associated with this practice, including biosolids linked to autism. He's received many awards and is currently the senior science advisor to the National Whistleblower Center. He's also reviewed Dr. Wakefield's research, and that's where we begin, down in Georgia. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Gary. Glad to be on the program again.
Well, what we've need to know from you, if you would please, is you took the time to review all of the relevant research and court records on Dr. Wakefield and to see what is legitimate from your perspective and what is not, the claims made by his primary accuser, Brian Deer. And I'd like for you to, step by step, explain what you found. You were a disinterested party. You didn't have any connection with Dr. Wakefield or others before you started this. So tell us what your independent investigation has revealed.
Sure. I just by coincidence happened to be attending a conference at which Dr. Wakefield was presenting some of his work in 2011, January of 2011 to be exact, and I had been invited to attend the conference and listen to some of the presentations concerning vaccine safety, and to, at the end of the conference, sort of give my assessment of the work that was presented there. The reason I was invited to that conference was because I have a project at the National Whistleblowers Center in Washington, D.C., where I investigate cases of research misconduct involving federal agencies, corporate entities, and universities. And so I had not even heard of Andrew Wakefield before attending the conference, and it was during that conference when CNN News broke the story about the allegations against Dr. Wakefield, published in a series of articles by the British Medical Journal, by the editors of the British Medical Journal, and this reporter, Brian Deer. So I watched a lot of that coverage on television during the evenings and breaks in the conference, and happened to cross paths with Dr. Wakefield during between one of the meetings, and I asked him about the allegations. He said that none of them were true. And we discussed his research a little bit, and I asked him whether or not the documents that were used in the General Medical Council's hearings were still available and whether I could access them to take a look at them. My interest was that I had never, ever witnessed a case where a scientific journal and a reporter had published allegations of research misconduct against a scientist, especially in a case where the scientist has never been found guilty of any wrongdoing by his or her employer, in this case, the University College London, which in fact had published a letter in The Lancet after investigating the allegations and stating that the university found none of them to have any substance to them. So that was what drove my interest, is seeing a phenomenon that I'd never seen before. So as a number of weeks went by, Dr. Wakefield made some of the documents that I requested available to me, and I actually made a trip out to Austin, Texas to look through his files because the volumes of documents were so great. And it was during that process that I found a document that had never been made public that really caught my attention. And what it was an expert report that was produced in 2006 by the GMC's expert gastroenterologist, pediatric gastroenterologist, a professor by the name of Ian Booth. And what struck me in looking at his expert report was that it was a perfect match as far as the type of analysis that he did that was published 4 years later in the British Medical Journal by Brian Deere. So I was just floored at what I was looking at because it makes no sense. How can a newspaper reporter who happened to have no training in medicine or science just happened to publish as his own work, as a journalistic investigation, an analysis that was submitted to the lawyers representing the General Medical Council, but never introduced as evidence, so it was never made public. What's the chances that that's just a coincidence? So at that moment in time, I was fully committed and devoted all of my available time for over a year going through the documents and doing a full analysis of the evidence used in the General Medical Council hearings and the allegations against Dr. Wakefield. And as I went through allegation after allegation, at the end of the road, it was apparent there was ample evidence available to the General Medical Council that proved, in my opinion, that there was no possibility that any of the allegations of ethical or research misconduct published by Brian Deere or the British Medical Journal were true. So what I ended up doing was compiling all of this evidence that had never been published by Brian Deere or the British Medical Council or the British Medical Journal or anyone else, and writing a commentary where step by step I went through and explained the evidence that had not been published and how it showed that all of the allegations against Dr. Wakefield were unfounded. And I submitted that commentary to several journals. In fact, just by coincidence, at the time I attended the conference at which Dr. Wakefield spoke in 2011, I'd been asked by the commentary editor for Nature to write a commentary about research misconduct that involves federal agencies, what I call institutional research misconduct, where a university or government agency actually supports, for political reasons, research misconduct. So in the course of doing that commentary for Nature, I submitted an analysis of the documents I'd found in Dr. Wakefield's case, along with similar cases that I'd studied, including my own experiences in that area. And Nature sat on that for weeks at a time and finally rejected it, not for any technical reasons, but basically said to, unless I could come up with something that would make it earth-shaking and more relevant to what was going on in 2012 at the end of this process, they weren't going to do anything with it. So then I submitted it to Nature Neuroscience and one or two other journals, which also sat on it for a long period of time before they would decide to reject it. And Nature Neuroscience, for example, wrote me a letter and said they had no argument with any of the evidence I presented. However, they didn't think it was suitable for their journal. So I decided one night, about midnight, to submit it to the British Medical Journal and see what they do with it. And within less than 24 hours, Fiona Godley, the editor-in-chief of the British Medical Journal, emailed me and said that they would not publish my commentary, but they would publish a brief article they would call a rapid response or a letter from me and publish this evidence that I had uncovered. So to make a long story short, they ended up rejecting the letter that I submitted to them and supplanting that with a letter that was written by their lawyers that they wanted me to submit as my own letter, describing a few of the documents that had turned up. And so I wasn't going to let them off the hook. I said, sure, you know, I'll read whatever letter you produce and we'll agree on the wording. And so I went through that process, and they ended up in 2012 or in at the toward the end of 2011 publishing a little short letter from me plus a feature article by Brian Deere attacking the evidence that I'd uncovered and attacking me. Fiona Godley published an editorial, and they had two gastroenterologists publish or submit commentaries to address the documents that I uncovered. But they only actually published a few of the documents that I uncovered. The most important evidence they didn't publish. So that was sort of the end of that story. In the end, I think that the documents that I submitted to the British Medical Journal clearly prove Dr. Wakefield's innocence. And in fact, when I submitted that evidence to a couple of agencies in the UK, including a board that is associated with the University College London, I got an email from the president of the University College London, who was very interested in the data, the information, the records that I had uncovered. And shortly after the British Medical Journal published some of my evidence, the documents that had turned up, and the journal Nature ran a news article about the evidence published by the British Medical Journal and their arguments, the University of College London announced that they were not going to investigate any of these allegations against Dr. Wakefield. And in fact, beyond that, Nature's reporter interviewed one of the authors of the commentary the British Medical Journal published attacking some of my evidence that had turned up, or not supporting it, that is, Professor Ingvar Bjarnason at King's College and King's College Hospital in the UK. And he agreed with my position that the evidence that was used against Dr. Wakefield did not support the argument that he'd fabricated any of the data.
So it is your opinion that this entire matter is politically or economically politically motivated?
Both politically and economically. And I think that was clear at the beginning. As soon as I began to read the transcripts of the General Medical Council hearings, the account of Brian Deere going to the editors of Lancet to accuse Dr. Wakefield and his co-authors of ethical and research misconduct, From the beginning, he was accompanied by a member of parliament, Evan Harris. So it was obvious to me that it was politically motivated to begin with. And then in the course of time, eventually when the British Medical Journal published the little letter they had created for me to submit to them as my rapid response, when they published that and the documents, they acknowledged for the first time that the British Medical Journal is sponsored by the manufacturers of the MMR vaccine. And so there they had accused Dr. Wakefield of not disclosing potential conflicts of interest, which was not even true. And they themselves were not disclosing the fact when they published all of this, these commentaries and editorials and articles by Brian Deer attacking Dr. Wakefield, that they were sponsored by the manufacturers of the MMR vaccine. I mean, how hypocritical can you be?
Have you been personally attacked by Brian Deer? And if so, what is your response to his attacks?
Yes. After the episode where the British Medical Journal published some of the documents that I found in Dr. Wakefield's files and documents obtained from one of Dr. Wakefield's attorneys in the UK, Brian Deer launched an all-out attack on me in the same mode that he attacked Dr. Wakefield and his co-authors. He went to great lengths. I had one case where one area of science that I looked at, and you mentioned it earlier, where I discovered there were countless illnesses and deaths linked to a policy that EPA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, my employer at the time, had a policy on that they were very protective of. So when I published a research article in Nature, which actually got an award from the EPA administrator, the program office at EPA met with the largest manufacturer of biosolids in the United States, which was the product that I was linking to illness and death, excuse me. And the company that produces this product called biosolids came up with a white paper that accused me of research misconduct, basically, in a nutshell, saying that EPA had not approved my research, therefore I was misusing federal funds, and therefore my research was fraudulent, and which is a criminal offense. You know, Brian Deer went to great lengths to try to get Dr. Wakefield accused of criminal misconduct and prosecuted for that. The same thing was being done by this company and some of the employees in Washington, D.C. at EPA. Well, fortunately, in my case, EPA's Inspector General stepped in, so did EPA's Assistant General Counsel. They thoroughly investigated the company's allegations against me and cleared me of all of that, and the EPA employee in Washington who released those allegations publicly was punished. So what Brian Deer did to me is he went back to those documents that this company, which is Synagro Technologies, Inc., out of Houston, Texas, went back to Synagro's allegations, which Synagro had already withdrawn and EPA had discredited, and Brian Deer republished those. on his website as a report to the BMJ. And then Fiona Godley turned right around and linked to his website and published an article in the BMJ supporting these allegations that Brian Deere was making against me. And Brian Deere went even further than that and accused or claimed that EPA fired me over research misconduct. So I had an attorney write Brian Deere a letter and provide all the documents where EPA had found that the allegations were without any basis in any facts, and where Synagro had withdrawn all of the allegations. And that was back in 2004. And Brian Deere replies to my attorney in Georgia stating that he has a large file of documents on me that he has put together of documents he's obtained from Synagro now that will not only be my undoing, but the National Whistleblower Center as well. And he tells my attorney in an email that if I don't shut up about what I keep saying about Brian Deere, that he will move in a different direction. He said that if I will, he told my attorney, if I will cease and desist from commenting on Brian Deere, as I have in the past, that he will have nothing more to say about me. But if I don't do that, he's going to take another path. And that other path, obviously, is to release these documents, which he claims are damaging, that he's gotten from Synagro. Of course, I think all of that is garbage. Synagro has no documents beyond what they released that would accuse me of anything.
What
and all of those have been discredited by EPA.
Are you going to take legal action against Brian Deere and the British Medical Journal?
My attorneys are looking into that at the moment. We've been taking a careful look at not only Brian Deere and the BMJ, but what happened in the United States. After Brian Deere published his attacks on me on his website, and Fiona Godley supported that in the BMJ, Brian Deere also submitted articles to Nature and other journals where he attacked me and made other allegations like he's made against Dr. Wakefield, which are false. What happened is it had revived the biosolids industry in the United States to go after me. So the biosolids industry in the United States followed on the heels of Brian Deere and republished Synagro's allegations of research misconduct as well and linked to Brian Deere's website and supported his allegations against me.
I'm sure that your attorney has explained to you that if someone libels you or someone slanders you, and if you can show that person the information they've given is incorrect and give them an opportunity to correct their error and apologize, if not, then that is easily proven in a court of law. Not only will that publication and individual suffer, but every website that publishes the wrong information will also be held accountable. So I'll find it interesting to see what the legal outcome of this is.
Yes, I'm sort of facing the same situation Andy did when he initially filed an appeal, and the costs are overwhelming. In this case, there are so many parties involved in between Brian Deere and the British Medical Journal and what went on in the United States supporting Brian Deere. It's a very complex case, and so we will make a decision on that probably within the next couple of months.
Or you start off by limiting your case, and then as you progress through discovery, because it's in the discovery that you nail people. That's how we won against the American Medical Association and the 12 largest medical organizations in America. They were found guilty. Their guilt was appealed to the Supreme Court. But no one would have thought that that case would have been won, except that in discovery, we had all these documents that no one would ever have thought would have seen the light of day. So consider that. So I appreciate you coming on and supporting the evidence that you found, independent of anyone else, exonerating Dr. Andrew Wakefield. My guest, Dr. David Lewis. Now let's go to New York City. We're in our studio. There is Don. Is it Loughborough?
Loughborough, yes. Thank you.
Loughborough. Okay. Don is the president of DARE Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to defending the interests of physicians and scientific researchers working in the best interest of the public in environmental health, and whose research has been suppressed. She has been supporting and generating funds for Dr. Wakefield's legal case. She is also the principal of the Enterprise Solutions Group, and they provide IT solutions to the healthcare industry. And she has a master's degree in law education, University of Baltimore, and she has a degree in journalism from Indiana University. Her website is darefoundation.org. Don, welcome to the program. Tell us your research into this case, Dr. Andrew Wakefield. What have you seen that raises suspicions that he was not dealt with fairly by either Brian Deere or the British Medical Council, the General Medical Council, or the medical publication?
Well, thank you for having me on the program. I am a mother of three great children, and two have been impacted by vaccines with their health. So I'm a person who lives inside of this conversation as an inquiry, and just in traveling those roads, I have come across the research of Dr. Andy Wakefield back in the 1990s. And it seemed to me that his original take was very valid, and as a parent, we were looking at some of the same concerns with how do we deal with safely managing infectious disease for our children. And then when he became under attack, it was another inquiry into how do researchers go about doing their work in a way that is unfettered, without being carried into these media muggings, where instead of addressing the issues that they're raising, you see a clear dynamic of, trashing the individual, trying to ruin their reputation, and going about this from a sort of a side path. So it was quite evident that something was amiss, because the research seemed to be a valid inquiry. It was, hey, we need to do further research and look at this, because a number of parents are bringing this to our attention. So, you know, in dealing with what is so, you can always get to a better place, in my opinion. So just looking at it from the parents' point of view, we decided to create the DARE Foundation to really defend our physicians and researchers who are one layer out from family, protecting the best interest of our children. And it was the thing that created the most interest for me was it wasn't the parents who brought about legal action against Dr. Andy Wakefield. It was a reporter. And it seemed odd that none of the parents were having a problem with Dr. Wakefield, but rather that it came from a media source whose backing we're not sure exactly initially what his financial ties were. And so the whole thing seemed rather inquisitive. And in 2010, I attended a lecture given by Brian Deere down at Johns Hopkins University, where he staged a quite impressive attack at the School of Public Health there for students. There were probably 300 students in attendance, along with medical doctors and researchers. And again, the presentation of what he said were the facts in uncovering this this big mystery that nobody in the medical arena had been able to do, but only he as a reporter and investigative journalist was able to unravel and present to everybody as the truth, which it looked more like he was taking apart something on a very superficial level. And so at the end of the talk, during question and answer, I asked the question, but so you've said all this about Andy in a way that portrays him as a problem, but what about the actual research? What about the actual issues that he raised with regards to children with autism having this novel bowel disease, to which he couldn't really address that? So, you know, to me, it was really clear, Gary, that something was amiss, and you don't just go after a doctor who's saying, I'm concerned about, and standing for a commitment, which most doctors take as an oath, which is, you know, listen to the patient's parents and do as much as you can for them to figure things out together in partnership. So it just didn't add up. And in further investigating this, the DARE Foundation has, you know, put together a lot of research that discounts the approach that Brian Deere has taken against Andy Wakefield. And it's a real shame because we're approaching 20 years where if his work had gone unfettered, we would be so much further along for the children who do have this novel bowel disease. And Andy said earlier it has been confirmed in subsequent research. So,
Dawn, have you watched the documentary Autism Made in the USA?
I have watched parts of it, and it's been a little while. Is there something specific?
Did you watch Vaccine Nation?
I did, yes.
Okay. Or the latest one just came out this year, The Silent Epidemic.
I attended your premiere of that in New York City, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it, yes.
The two underlying issues in all three of those films is that there are hundreds of scientists and physicians. There are hundreds of thousands of parents who all agree. The kids were normal before the vaccines. The kids were not normal afterwards. And one of the anomalies of all this is this gastrointestinal disturbances. And so when all these doctors are saying, get them off dairy, get them off gluten, get them probiotics, give them methylated B12 and folic acid, they've seen changes substantial enough to give hope to the parents. Now, I've worked with them. I filmed them. I'm not talking about a few dozen, hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't it interesting that here is Brian Deere and the British medical hierarchy saying that no, this isn't the case, and Andrew Wakefield was just there along with his other colleagues before anyone else has awakened to this, but this is no secret what he's finding. This is common knowledge within the autism recovery movement and the doctors caring for them.
That's right.
So, in effect, all of these attacks are just disempowering the children, the parents, and the doctors. And I have to ask, for what reason? I still do not have comfort that the motive for the attacks against these doctors, including Wakefield, has come to light. I believe it'll be a while, and then we'll find it. Final thought, please.
Well, somewhere in time, the policies and programs that were intended to protect our children became the issue to protect instead of our children. And that's where we need to look. So when we're talking to physicians and researchers, the DARE Foundation really holds a new space from which we can defend these people's work so that it can go unfettered and that we can make progress, real progress, for the well-being of our children.
Well, thank you very much. And again, the foundation is DAIR, D-A-I-R, foundation.org. Don Lobaro, Dr. David Lewis is my other guest today, and Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And Dr. Wakefield, the website is autismmediachannel.com. His book is Callous Disregard. I want to thank you all for being with us today, and this story will be continued as new information becomes available. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you very much for listening.